Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, how many names and dates of people who perished in Mauthausen are now known? Mauthausen is a small town in Austria, about 100 miles or 165 kilometers west of Vienna on the Danube River. Between 1938 and its liberation in 1945, it was the site of a major Nazi concentration camp. Shortly after the war, a museum was established there, and it's developed into an important memorial, which now includes smaller memorials at the nearby Gusen and other satellite camps. In this program, we're speaking with Dr. Christian Durr, curator of the Mauthausen Memorial, about its history and how it has evolved since it was first opened in 1949.
Thank you very much for speaking with us today. Could you first tell us very briefly the history of Mauthausen, the camp, where it is and how it was similar or different from other camps and what happened to it after the war?
Sure, of course. Well, first of all, the location of Mauthausen is about 200 kilometers east of Vienna, close to the provincial capital of Linz. And the concentration camp there in Mauthausen was founded in August 1938 with the first prisoner transport arriving from the concentration camp Dachau. The reason why Mauthausen was chosen as a location for a concentration camp, there are two main reasons. First of all, after the Anschluss of Austria to the Third Reich, it was already in the beginning pronounced that there should be a concentration camp established in the new territories of the annexed Austria on one hand. And why it was particularly Mauthausen that was chosen as a location has to do with the century-long history of rock production, of quarry industry in this area. We are at the time where the SS is seeking to employ prisoners or the forced labor of prisoners in economic enterprises. And one of these enterprises was the so-called DES, the Deutsche Erd- und Steinwerke Company, which was a company owned by the SS. And whose economic basis was the exploitation of stone quarries in different areas, and among them also in the area of Mauthausen and Gusen. So from 38 onwards, many of the prisoners that had been transferred to Mauthausen were forced to work in the quarries there in the area of Mauthausen and Gusen. If we speak of Mauthausen, we don't only speak of one single camp. Actually, we speak of a whole system of camps that was comprised of more than 40 sub-camps, and a kind of, we call it a twin camp or a branch camp, which would be the camp of Gusen, which is just approximately 4 kilometers from Mauthausen, and throughout its history was for some time even bigger than the main camp of Mauthausen itself. The more than 40 sub-camps were most of all located in the whole eastern part of Austria and served mainly purposes for the armament industry. So at one point, beginning sometime in 1943, the main camp Mauthausen was developed into a kind of a distribution hub for forced laborers or slave laborers, being concentration camp prisoners, and then were distributed throughout this camp system of more than 40 sub-camps.
How many people were involved in this? I mean, how many prisoners?
Altogether, we don't have the exact numbers, but the current scientific estimate is that there were around 190,000 prisoners from more than 40 different countries or nationalities being deported to the camp system Mauthausen and distributed throughout the system. And approximately half of them, more than 90,000, were assassinated there or died because of the life conditions and the conditions under which they had to live there.
Tell us something about these prisoners, because they weren't all Jewish, were they?
No, not really. Actually, the very first prisoners that arrived to Mauthausen were Austrians and Germans who had been imprisoned in concentration camps due to their criminal prior history. So there were people who had served sentences before, and the Nazis then decided, for prevention reasons, as they named it, as they called it, to inter them for the time, particularly for the time of the war, in concentration camps. Totally illegal, obviously, and beyond any judicial standards, so to say. But after that, most of the prisoners that were deported to Mauthausen were deported for political reasons. In the beginning, mostly Austrians and Germans, but with the beginning of the war, people from many different nationalities, particularly from countries and territories occupied by the German Wehrmacht. And in the beginning, there were only actually few Jewish prisoners deported to Mauthausen Gusen and its subcamps. But particularly from 1944 onwards, there were big transports with mostly Jewish prisoners arriving from camps as Auschwitz or Brasov in Poland that were Jews who had been passed the selection in Auschwitz and had been selected for forced labor. And as forced laborers, they were transferred to Gusen, to Mauthausen, to Gusen, and to some of the subcamps, where in many cases they had to work, for example, in the construction of underground tunnel systems for the accommodation of armament industry there.
And there were also many Spaniards in Mauthausen.
Exactly. After the Poles, the Spaniards were the second national group to arrive to Mauthausen, and particularly to Gusen. The Spaniards were refugees from the Spanish Civil War, who had found refuge in France, were interned in refugee camps there, and then most of them served in the French army at the time when the German Wehrmacht attacked France. Those who fell prisoners of war to the Germans were not deported then to prisoner of war camps, so only in the beginning, but after that were against, obviously, the Geneva Convention, everything. They were interned in concentration camps, and most of all in Mauthausen and in Gusen. We are speaking about more than 7,000 Spaniards who were interned there, and approximately two-thirds of them perished.
What happened to Mauthausen after the war?
First of all, the camps were liberated by the U.S. Army, but as from August 1945 onward, the fell under Soviet military jurisdiction. So they were on Soviet territories. So the Soviet troops took over the camp of Mauthausen and also the camp of Gusen. They served for some time as a military base, but not for long. And then there are two different histories regarding Mauthausen on one hand and Gusen on the other. While Mauthausen was handed over by the Soviet authorities to the Austrian Republic, with the obligation to preserve it as a memorial site for the future, Gusen was being kept exploited by the Soviets, and actually almost all the rests of the camp Gusen disappeared within a very short time, which leads to the situation that we have in the present, which means that Mauthausen nowadays is the central memorial site for National Socialist mass crimes here in Austria, while Gusen has been forgotten throughout the years and decades after the war.
Tell us about the history of the memorial, how it came into being and when it opened, and a little bit what it was like at first.
Well, basically, everything started in July 1947 when the Soviet authorities handed over what was left of the camp to the Austrian state. What was left of the camp back then was mainly all the stone structures, basically, of the camp. What had disappeared at that time were all the wooden structure, the barracks, most of the barracks for prisoners, and practically all of the barracks for the accommodation of the SS troops. So what was left back then, already in 47, was only a part of what used to be the concentration camp.
What happened to the rest of it? How did it come to be destroyed so soon after the war?
Yeah, there were various different reasons. First of all, partially It was looted, so the local population just helped themselves to find construction material there, wood, stones, whatever. Particularly in Gusen, not so much in Mauthausen, and also partially the state, who after 47 was the owner of the premises of Mauthausen, sold off some of the barracks. The idea was to reduce the structure, original structure, so to say, in order to make it more affordable to conserve what is left. That was the basic idea, and this is why in 47 only part of the camp remained. Finally, in 49, so two years later, the memorial site was opened for the first time as Museum Mauthausen, Mauthausen Museum, and back then it was basically what was there was the remaining structures of the camp. Those who were in charge mostly were survivors of the camp. They were the ones who organized groups to visit, who organized guided tours, and who also installed like the first information systems, information plaques on the site, for example.
Who visited it at that time?
Actually, until the 70s or even until, yeah, it started in the 70s and until the 80s, you could say, Mauthausen was a very remote place. It was not really a place that was visited by many people. Back then, there were, for example, no school groups yet visiting, which are the big, most important groups now in the present. Back then, it was mostly survivors and their families coming from Austria, but from all different countries abroad, actually, who wanted to go back to their place of suffering and to commemorate, so to say, their fellow inmates there, and to commemorate their own fate.
So then how did the memorial evolve after that? What changes took place?
I think the most important change to the memorial happened in the late 60s and early 70s, when the first permanent exhibition was inaugurated, which was in May 1970. The exhibition was a product of a many years long work, particularly of one survivor of Mauthausen, whose name is Hans Marschalek. He was a Czech Austrian, and during the time of the camp, he was the second camp scribe. After that, he served for the Ministry of the Interior and was commissioned by the Ministry of the Interior, first of all, to collect information, to collect data, to collect documents and testimonies about the history of the camp. And in a second step, to create out of this data, testimonies, pictures, etc., the first permanent exhibit in Mauthausen about the history of this camp system, as I said before, inaugurated in the 1970s.
Tell us about the cemetery.
Right, the cemetery. When the U.S. Army arrived at the camps of Mauthausen and Gusen, which was on 5th of May 1945, they were confronted with many corpses that were practically spread across the premises, which has to do with the fact that the SS had left the camp 2 days before. The crematorium ovens were already like beyond their capacities. So there were many prisoners at that time dying that didn't have any burial, didn't have any, were not cremated anymore, etc. So that was the situation when the US Army arrived. And the first thing they had to do was dig big mass graves or cemeteries close to the camps of Mauthausen and Gusen, also for those prisoners who perished after liberation, because many even perished in the weeks after the liberation, well, due to the week's weak physical status. There were around 3,500 corpses buried in these two cemeteries. And these two cemeteries finally in the late 50s were exhumed. Some of those human remains that could be identified were repatriated to their countries, but most of them then were reburied in the campgrounds within the nowadays Mauthausen Memorial, which is why today we have the situation that within the campgrounds or the memorial site grounds, there are two big cemeteries with the human remains of those people.
You mentioned that survivors helped contribute to this. Could you tell us a little bit more about that, and especially the story of Hans Marschalek?
Yes, sure. Well, as I said, Hans Marschalek, he was Austrian and Czech at the same time. He went back and forth during also after the annexation of Austria between Vienna and Prague. He was a communist and he was a resistance fighter. He was part of a resistance network. He was arrested by the Gestapo in 1942 and finally taken to Mauthausen, where he was prisoner until the liberation of the camp in May 1945. He managed to get into an important position within the prisoner functionary system, so to say. He was a functionary. He had a function, and his function was being camp scribe, second camp scribe in the camp, which meant he had an overview of all the incoming transport, of all the numbers of deceased, because he had access to all those lists that were drawn up in the camp's registry office where he was working. He also was part of the resistance movement towards the liberation of the camp. And after 1945, after his liberation from Mauthausen, he finally served for the Austrian police within the Ministry of the Interior. And being employee of the Ministry of Interior, and the Ministry of the Interior being responsible for the memorial site of Mauthausen, he was commissioned practically as a director of the Mauthausen Museum at that time.
Tell us about the visitors center and the new permanent exhibitions and the Room of Names.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I said before, in 1970, the first historic exhibition was inaugurated. And that was basically the situation that lasted until the early 2000s. So throughout three decades, there were not many changes in Mauthausen. Although already since the late 1980s, early 1990s onwards, there were many international demands for a redesign, new concepts for the memorial site. But yeah, finally, the first results only appeared in the early 2000s. In 2003, a new visitor center was inaugurated, which back then served as an exhibition site, but also for accommodation of the administration offices of the administration of the memorial site, so to say. This was a first huge step. At the same time, a smaller visitor center was also inaugurated 1 year later at the site of the Gusen Memorial. And finally, in 2013, in Mauthausen, two new big permanent exhibitions were inaugurated. One exhibition about the general history of the camp system Mauthausen-Gusen, and the second exhibition, which deals particularly with the methods of mass killing and mass executions and the ways people were assassinated, the prisoners were assassinated, and prisoners died in Mauthausen. Particularly one exhibition on this particular topic.
And tell us about the Room of Names.
Right. At the same time in 2013, not only those two exhibitions were installed, but also there was a general redesign of the whole area, which was the execution area, so to say, which is in the basement between the infirmary building and the Zellenblau, or the block, which would be the camp prison. In this basement, there were situated three crematorium ovens, the gas chamber, and an execution site where prisoners were being killed by shots in the neck. So this whole area got also a new design, new information plaques, et cetera, which were all inaugurated in 2013. And the main part was the or the most important change, so to say, was the inauguration of the so-called Room of Names. The Room of Names is situated in a huge hall, which towards the end of the camp served as a practically as a deposit for corpses before they were burned in the crematorium. In this room, we installed glass plaques, so you can now walk through the room, and those glass plaques cover basically the floor of the room. You walk within those glass plaques, and those glass plaques contain the names of altogether 81,000 victims of prisoners who had been assassinated in Mauthausen and its subcamps. 81 is the number which back then in 2013, the number of prisoners which we had enough documentation about, so we did know their names and their dates. Nowadays, this number has increased already. We know the names and dates of at least 84,000 or almost 85,000 prisoners who perished in this camp system. And this room of names also has a digital equivalent. You can look it up on Google. If you enter virtual room of names, Mauthausen, you will be guided to a website which is has a database where everybody can look for particular names, can search for biographies, photos, etc. about these people, and it serves as a kind of interactive virtual memory space, because the international community, whoever wants to, whoever has any information about particular prisoners, can upload biographies, photos, document, etc. concerning those 84,000 victims that are documented in this room of names.
I just think it's amazing that there is so much documentation and that they kept such good records of all these people who they were murdering.
Yes. Well, in fact, the Nazis or the SS kept records basically of everything, but they also ordered towards the end of the war and with view of the coming liberation, they ordered prisoners to destroy these records because they were aware of the fact that those records could serve as testimony, as evidence of the crimes committed at those places. But at the same time, it was thanks to many survivors that a huge part of the most important documents nowadays are preserved, because those prisoners, one of them, for example, Hans Marschalek, but also others like Ernst Martin, who for example, was the one who was, he worked for the camp physician, and he set up all the death registers, for example. He also saved the death registers from being destroyed, obviously risking his own life by saving those documents. Yeah, so the fact that there was a good resistance organization among the prisoners, and that many prisoners were willing to risk their own lives to save those documents, nowadays gives us the perfect situation, or the really good situation as historians, to have access to many original documents that are still preserved, which is not the case for most of the other concentration camps, actually.
Tell us about some of the activities that you carry out. For example, educational activities. What do you have? A lot of school groups who go there, and what kind of things do you do in that area?
Sure. Nowadays, the institution Mauthausen Memorial is comprised of several different departments. The most important and biggest department is the educational department. We have a core group of 6 or 7 people working there, and we have a big group of guides who are in charge of guiding groups, mostly school groups from Austria, but also from abroad, youth groups, through the memorial site. So the most demanded offer is a general guided tour through the premises, which takes something between 2 or 3 hours. But we also offer longer pedagogic formats, workshops, etc., etc. More or less half of all the visitors to Mauthausen are groups of young people, Austrian schools, but youth groups from abroad as well.
In the public schools in Austria, do they have to study the Holocaust, and do they have to visit these places?
It's part of the curriculum in schools. However, the depth in which it is studied depends a lot on on the particular teacher and the personal interest and of each teacher. But it's obviously part of curriculums. A visit to Mauthausen is not compulsory, but it is recommended officially by the Ministry of Education, Austrian Ministry of Education. It's a recommendation exists since the 1980s. And in fact, most, or I would say almost all Austrian pupils, like secondary schools, at one point of their school career visit Mauthausen.
Tell us about some of the other visitors. Do you know how many visitors you get, let's say, in a year, and who they are, aside from the students?
Yes, obviously a lot has changed with the COVID pandemic. After the COVID pandemic in 2019, we had approximately 270,000 visitors each year. When obviously after that, during COVID pandemic, obviously the numbers decreased a lot. In 2022, they are rising again, and we are getting slowly, step by step, close to the number of visitors that we had before. Last year, for example, we had 164,000 visitors throughout the year. And the groups or the people visiting, they are very diverse. We have, for example, since Mauthausen is also a touristic location, we have simply tourists that are going, for example, on the bike route along the Danube, pass by Mauthausen, and they come to visit Mauthausen. But we also have youth groups, many youth groups from Italy, for example. We have families of survivors and descendants of survivors visiting on a regular basis from various countries. Lately, for example, there are many Spaniards, many Spanish groups coming to Mauthausen, because in Spain, this whole involvement with commemoration and memory of the deportation of the camps has just started a few years ago. So there are many groups from Spain coming, many groups from France. Yeah, I would say from really individual touristic visitors to the whole range, to family members and directly affected people by this history.
What kind of feedback do you get from the visitors?
Well, basically positive, like in general, very positive feedback. It ranges also from, it's a very sad place, a depressive place, obviously, but the way this history, this very sad history is transmitted, is appreciated by people. On the other hand, for many other people, or for some, or for many, it's also a place of hope, a place in a way of positive energy, because we don't just want to draw on this terrible and sad history, but we also want to give people a positive view of the future, so to say. So we also address issues of human rights, we address issues of democracy building, we address issues of anti-Semitism, anti-racism, etc. So we are also trying to address these rather more positive topics, so to say.
Are there any plans for the future, or is it, let's say, pretty much stationary the way it is right now?
No, it's absolutely not stationary. It's very dynamic, we have to say. There are many plans for the future, particularly the most important and biggest long-lasting one is a project which has to do with the former Gusen concentration camp. As I said, Gusen is just 4 kilometers away from Mauthausen. And recently, last year, the Austrian Republic bought some plots of land on the area of the former Gusen camp. This land was being used after 1945 as industrial area, but there are still some original structures from the time of the camp left there. And those new plots of land will be developed within the years to come into a dignified memorial site commemorating the victims of the Camp Gusen. We are currently in the stage of setting up, or we are not just setting up, it's already set up. We are conducting a participation project which involves stakeholders from all over the world on international level, on national level, and on regional level. So we are also trying to include the population living there, the people living there, the direct neighbors, people living in the settlement of Husen. And within this process of participation, we are trying to set up a commonly agreed framework concept for the future transformation of this new land into a memorial site.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you, so please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSephirah.com. See you next week.